The RTE Rugby Podcast.
And you're very welcome to the RTE Rugby Podcast. We're here ahead of the Guinness Pro 12 semi-finals weekend. Luke Fitzgerald and James Downey are with me in the studio, I'm delighted to say. And Sean Holly is on the line. Lads, you're very welcome. Good to have you in.
Cheers, Hugh. Thank you.
We're looking forward to this weekend. We have two Irish provinces against the two Welsh, obviously. And we'll pretend that Sean isn't there for a second. But, you know, I suppose the Irish fans are hoping that it's an All-Ireland final. We'll wait and see what happens. But it's an exciting weekend ahead.
Yeah, earmuffs, Sean. we're bringing out the knives.
Yeah,
look, it's very exciting. I'm sure James feels the same. A lot of anticipation. They've had great seasons, so I think there's good reason to be excited about the two fixtures.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, Leinster and Munster have really kind of come on from what we saw last season this year for various different reasons. But I think, you know, nobody would argue if they were the two teams to make the final, given the form they displayed.
Yeah, no, certainly not. I think as how they played last year and where they are now today and how they've moved forward and the coaching structures have changed in both, but also the players have bought in behind things. And two home semi-finals, you know, it's great to see for the game, and hopefully we can get two Irish teams in that Dublin final. It'd be great.
Yeah, what do you reckon, Sean? I mean, the Welsh boys going to have something to say about this.
The Welsh boys got their work cut out, that's for sure, boys. You know, they're certainly the two Irish provinces are favourites, and rightly so. They both had great seasons, particularly Munster, I think, in the circumstances. But as those boys in the studio will know, the Ospreys are potentially have a sting in their tail, and the Scarlets have some good form, although they will be missing a couple of key players this weekend.
Yeah, OK. Well, look, before we get into the game, I want to talk about some news that came out today, and the EPCR have basically announced changes to the qualification system for the Champions Cup, which is going to end Italy's guaranteed seat at the table and remove the playoffs as well for the final place in the competition. So this is going to come into effect from 2018-2019. Luke, your initial thoughts about this. In essence now, the rules that have protected Italy getting at least one place guaranteed in the Champions Cup are going to be gone from 2018. Is that a good thing?
I think so. I think thus far it's had no improvement or no bearing on their performances or their achievements in the league campaign. Mm. I think whenever you look at the Champions Cup groups, whatever group has an Italian team, you always say, look, that's a guaranteed, you know, two teams are going to come from that group. And that's not right. And they're trying to make, you know, they're trying to have this meritocracy, I suppose, and associated with that competition. And I think it's a little bit unfair. And I suppose maybe that's the kick that they need to get themselves back to, you know, where they should be, because they have all the potential to be a top European team and competing in the Six Nations.
Yeah, no, I completely back up that point there as well. You kind of see teams who are pushing so hard. You look at this weekend, you've got Northampton and Connacht fighting still to get it. Yes, I'm sure if they played an Italian team that they'd probably put up a decent score. And I completely reiterate what Luke said about, you get an Italian team, you're looking at 10 points. You need 10 points from those two games, you know.
And the Italians, James, they've had a lot of chances here. I mean, this system has been in place, you know, for a long time, where the Italian clubs have been guaranteed at least one participant in the top tier of European rugby. And they haven't made any dent really in the competition, bar maybe one victory in the last how many years. So I think it's probably come to that stage where the tournament organisers have to do not what's best for growing rugby, but what's best for this tournament.
Oh, completely. And even when you go over and you play in Italy, and I've played in Treviso a few times in the Champions Cup or Heineken Cup beforehand, and you're not getting the crowds either, and like the players don't have that anticipation. And you see a European game being played in Ireland, be it Holman, be it Ulster, be it Leinster, wherever it is, it there's a huge buzz, and you just don't get that when you play an Italian team. It doesn't have that same feel of a big game, you know. And I do think it needs to be a big game. If the whole structure's changed as it did before with the new format for the Champions Cup, and it needed to bring up that quality.
Yeah, I think look, Conor O'Shea he's got a real job on his hands. You can't, you know, they'll talk about maybe possibly making one team, or you can't have one team if you want to compete on an international stage. You just can't have it, you know. I know Argentina have been doing it, but I think they're more based abroad and they're at bigger clubs abroad. But I just think, you know, that's a really tough job to me. And I know it feels like they're, you know, it's a shot when they're down, because they are down at the moment. But I think it needed to happen, you know, because just for the, like I said, for the meritocracy that they're trying to create with that competition, you just can't have them as a guaranteed 10
points.
You're
nearly looking at a national team playing, like, you know, because they still in international level, they produce one-off games.
Mm.
And it's not good. Like, they've had their time, as you said, in the Champions Cup, and now in the Six Nations, they've had their chance. and they're just not kicking on, you know, and something needs to be done about it.
Sean, you know, what's your view on this? You look at the Pro 12 table this season and Cardiff Blues finished in seventh place. So if the structures that have been announced today were in place for this season, Cardiff would qualify automatically as it, you know, happened. They'd have to go into the playoff. What's your view on the Italian clubs and these new rules that are going to come in?
Well, I concur with the boys. I think it's very difficult that you accommodate in an Italian side, you know, for lots and lots of reasons. You know, they don't have any travelling support, and you know, it's difficult when you're trying to get people through the turnstiles. That's one thing. If you end up with an Italian in the European group, as we did a few times at the Ospreys, it's essentially a three-horse race. And when you're fighting to get a home quarter final, which is very, very important, the boys will tell you in the knockout stages, then, you know, you don't have that because everybody beats the Italians home and away for 5 points. It's, you know, they haven't improved in the competitions. That's the disappointing thing. They've had a long time to sort of get some traction in it, and it's not happening. Certainly the wins are too few and far between. So, you know, you have to say a Connacht, a Cardiff Blues, those sort of teams who are potentially deserving in their stature, their performances, I would support it. It's not ideal for the Italians, of course, but they've been getting it too easy, in my view, and I would support it.
It's going to make the league better, though, as well, isn't it?
Well, look, the bigger picture here is that we need a strong Italy in the competition. We need it, you know, teams like Georgia, teams like Russia, they're getting better and better. We need Italy to get better, but this has proven that it doesn't help that.
Yeah.
You know, that's I think they've had their chance in that, and now we need to just move on with the competition, make sure the best teams go through, and look, it should make the competition better. It absolutely will make the Pro 12 better as well.
Yeah, I think, Sean, that's another big point here, that it is going to make the league format a lot fairer, and it's going to make it a lot more competitive for that seventh spot now.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Because you look at those playoffs now, and it's pretty impossible, isn't it? You know, for Connacht, you know, Cardiff Blues, they got away fixtures in the first playoff and the second. So there's that extra spot to fight for. It adds a bit of spice towards the end of the season around that mid-table, which I'm in support of. I think the Pro 12 has got really good with this since the advent of playoffs. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of it.
OK, right, let's have a look at the matches this weekend. And tomorrow night we have live coverage on 2FM of Leinster against the Scarlets from the RDS, and we're looking forward to it. The Leinster team has been named today, Luke, and I just want to get your initial reaction. I suppose the standout names that Leinster fans might be talking about, Sean O'Brien is on the bench and Devon Toner on the bench. Is that because they haven't had a huge amount of game time and just maybe that Leo feels he needs to go with the guys who are playing, or what's the reason?
I really don't know. Myself and Leo probably differ slightly in some views in terms of, I think he's a big man for having real impact on the bench. I'd have the impact from the start. And that's somewhere where I think we might slightly differ. And I just see that in a few different selections just throughout my time, just watching him as a coach and obviously playing under him as well. But I think those two are probably down to that. I think Devon would be calling the line out normally. That's obviously huge, you know, set piece, as I'm sure Jimmy would tell you.
Yeah.
And Sean would say the same, is obviously crucial at this level. So someone like Dev, you know, I think he's definitely a guy who maybe has picked up a knock. We'd have to believe Leo and what he says there. And I'd say Sean, he's returning from an injury, so I think there's no point reading too much into that, even though I would say when I look at Leo selecting teams, I always think he does like to have the impact on the bench. Slightly different opinion to myself.
So what's your view of this from looking from the outside in? Are you surprised that Devon Toner and Sean O'Brien aren't in there?
I'd nearly have a slightly different opinion to Luke. Like, you know, I think you're starting with a team, and I think you look at the Scarlets bench and they don't have that impact that the Leinster bench does, you know. And I think that coming down to the 60 minutes, you're fatigued, you're a little bit tired, and then you've got Sean coming on, you know he's going to carry ball, like any bit of fatigue there, and slip off a tackle now, one mistake and you can get through. They've gone a 6-2 split as well
on the bench,
yeah, which is interesting as well. Yeah. So
they're expecting this to be a bit of a battle up front then, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. So if that's the way they're looking at it, you know, it's okay. Right, go out there, give it socks for 50 minutes, and then we'll make some changes then, fresh blood and keen to kick on.
They've got such a strong, like, I mean, I talk about this, you know, to anyone who listen, I think that Leinster pack of the last kind of 8 or 9 years, I mean, people will talk about the Drickos, the Darces, the Shaggies, all these guys, but that Leinster pack, I mean, through that period, like, there's, and they have it now as well, I think it looks like they've kind of got a couple more guys that look like real standout performers to me, your Levies, your Conans, yeah. These fellas, yeah, they really kind of kicked on. I think, you know, James Ryan coming back is big, but Ross Manoni's obviously gone straight into the team for a semi-final. I think this team, there's the pack is so strong, and it has been for a long time, and I think that they might not get the plaudits. It's such a hard team to play against. They can pretty much bring on another international front row, and they've lost Marty Moore just last year. Yeah. So, like, it's, you know, I can see why he's doing that, and I actually like the ploy with the six forwards. I just feel like sometimes I'd go with the impact straight away.
Sean, like, what do you make of the Leinster team? Was that's the lad Sean O'Brien and Devon Toner on the bench? Obviously, Leo Cullen is expecting a battle, and he wants that impact from his substitutes. Can you understand that?
Yeah, totally. It's massive these days in professional rugby to have a strong bench, particularly in the big, big games. I think the depth that Leinster have is very, very important. It's something that we used to pride ourselves on at the Ospreys. You were able to, even if a side was in the game at 60-65, you had a strong enough bench that was as good as what was coming off, and it just adds that killer blow psychologically as much as anything. So I think Leinster have that, you know, having O'Brien coming on and Devon Toner, as you said, they're the front rows. You know, I think that will have a massive impact on a Scarlets team that is missing now Ken Owens and Jake Ball. Now they don't have that. They have good young talent in depth, but you can't miss two internationals like that in a game of this magnitude. So yeah, I think Leinster looking really strong there.
Yeah, but Scarlets, I mean, they do have a lot of momentum and a lot of form going into this. I think they've only lost one match since round 11 of the league, and that was in Leinster, actually, ironically enough, at the RDS. So, you know, they really are playing some good rugby. I just wonder how much those two injuries that you've just mentioned, though, and the experience that Jake Ball and Ken Owens and the muscle that they have up front are going to hurt this Scarlets pack.
Well, it will hurt them. It will take its toll at some point, but you're absolutely right. You know, sometimes the youth and exuberance, people like Ryan Elias, the hooker that comes in, he's highly, highly rated. His graph is very steep. Mm. And, you know, they have strength in depth. And sometimes, you know, when you go into the unknown, then it can be on your side because you don't fear anything. But, you know, we all know what it's like going to the RDS. It requires a particular formula and everything to go right on the day. But the Scarlets have that confidence and young talent. If they can get enough ball, we all know about their backs and the problems they can cause. But, you know, going to the RDS with the incentive that Leinster have of one game, one win to play a home final is massive. So it's a tall order for the Scarlets.
Can I ask you what you make of Joey Carby this season? I remember this time last year he was at the Ulster Bank League final, and, you know, he stood out at out half there, man of the match, and played really well. His rise through this Leinster team has been brilliant to watch.
I think he's fantastic. I think he's mercurial. He's got all the talent. My worry is he'll end up like somebody that we had, James Hook. I'm just really worried that he's going to get pushed around and never find his position. I hope they find him one and stick with it. That's my only thought.
What is his position then, Luke?
Look, I think long term for him, I'd be looking at 10.
Really, yeah?
I do think he's a 10. He's a really lovely fullback. I think he'll lack size there in the end. Personally, just from looking at him, just at international level, I always think, you know, if I'm thinking about a top player, I think how they get on when they're playing against 15 of the best guys from the other countries, and they're all
sure
usually big fellas. The only guy I can see in the back three who kind of gets away with that stuff or got away with it for years and years was Shane Williams, and even he had some struggles at different points, or Jason Robinson perhaps. But then you look at a final and he gets towered over by Lottie Takiri. So I have an opinion on things like that. I think at 10, he's got a great temperament. You know, a guy I always talk to about playmakers, Owen Redden, he says, you know, real Rolls Royce for him, is a guy who plays that 95% of the time, plays the first option he sees, the simple one, you know. And I think Joey does that really well. He doesn't try to spectacular all the time. I do think possibly he carries a little bit too much. I'm thinking of the Ulster game in Ravenhill, but I think that'll come out of his game when he plays there a bit more often. I think that's the place for him in the future. The challenge is Johnny Sexton's there, so he ain't going to be playing if Johnny's around, you know?
If you're Leo Cullen or Stuart Lancaster then, James, and you're saying, all right, I want my best 15 players on the pitch, do you just accommodate him at fullback because he can play there, or do you say, no, I want him as a 10, I'm going to keep him there and train him there, and he has to bide his time?
Yeah, I think it's the latter there. I think he has to bide his time there. Like, unfortunately, look, he's going to get some game time when Johnny goes down, because Johnny goes down a bit, so I think he'll get some game time at 10.
This is only Johnny's fifth appearance in the Pro 12 all season, so there you go.
Exactly, but that's why he's established. But he's also able to fit a fullback, and I've played at other clubs where you've had to move 10 and 15. It's a very interchangeable position, but I really like Joey when he takes it line, you know, and you don't know what you're going to get. And as a defender, he keeps you so honest, you know, you can't slip off him. Yeah. And if he gets a half gap, he's gone. And to have someone like that, a fullback, you know, he's a bit further away and you can probably get a lineup, but at 10 it's devastating, especially around forwards.
Absolutely. Well, look, I think he's a real foil for what the two got, what Leinster have in the centre at the moment as well. I think as playmakers, actually, I think Robbie is a far better playmaker for Leinster. Obviously, he's given license to do that a bit more in Leinster. But I still think, you know, it's great having another guy outside John. You always want to have that third playmaker, because usually, you know, and James will tell you, and Sean as well, you know, a defence, it's that kind of, it's usually that second or third pass that breaks the team down. That's what you need. You need another pair of hands, another guy who's organising, who people will expect to get the ball off, so they'll get in better positions. He's a guy you can do that off. Okay. And I think he's, you've seen that with Leinster. You've seen he's that other guy outside Johnny or outside Luke McGrath, whoever's playing, the other guys who are kind of facilitating other players. He's that guy for them. I think, you know, if I look at Gary and I look at Robbie, I think they're both excellent ball carriers. They're brilliant defenders, the two of them. But from a playmaking point of view, there's growth to go for both of them, I think, to be really top class in that department.
Sean, you had this kind of, I suppose you had a few different examples of guys who were pushing into the starting 15. But, I mean, what was your philosophy when you were coaching? Did you want your best 15 on the pitch and you were able to accommodate different players to different positions? Or do you just, you not pigeonhole them, but you fix them to a position because that's where they're best and then you work around that?
Great question. It depends really on the individual player. And I take an example of James Hook and Dan Bigger. Dan Bigger is a modern fly half, if you like, in terms of, you know, he runs a game. He's like Johnny Sexton. He organises, he leads, he kicks well, he defends well. And when you got somebody like James Hook, you have to find a place for him. For us, you know, I wanted to play with a second 10. I wanted to play the distributor at 12. He affords you, much as Luke is saying, to be that sort of second 5-8. You can play both sides of the ruck and cause the fullback lots of problems. He's got space either side of him. Which way does he go? You know, he's that second playmaker. You've got a second kicking option. And so it does pose huge, huge problems, particularly for the back three. So, you know, that's what we did there. And, you know, further out sometimes, if you're looking for a little bit more gas, you know, we moved Tommy Bowe, you know, to accommodate the likes of a Nicky Walker to be able to play Shane Williams and Lee Byrne and Tommy Bowe in the same team. You know, you go for Tommy as a bit of an outside break at 13. So you have to find a place and a way of playing, because in the big games, you've got to have your big players.
I think Leinster have won all six of their previous Pro 12 semi-finals at the RDS, so it is a tough ask for Scarlets. You take out Jake Ball as well, and you take out Ken Owens, and it just gets that bit bigger. But on Saturday, I think if there is a sense that there could be an upset in terms of the away team coming and winning this weekend, it might just be the Ospreys. James, how do you think Munster are set up for this? You're not going to agree with me, I can see by your face, but...
He's getting ready what do you to reckon? Here.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm sitting far away from him.
Yeah, no, I was talking about the other game. I was like, what game's he talking about? Yeah, this, I think, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Sean, but I think the way the Ospreys have gone this year, they started off really well. They got their points on the board nice and early, but then they've kind of stuttered their way into the semi-final. Obviously, they've been there, they've done it, they know what to do and how to win. Like, but it's one of those, like, they're going to be the first team to win an away semi-final, you know, and I don't really see that changing, especially the way Munster have been playing. Yeah. I think obviously losing to Saracens was a bit of a one-off, but they got back on track with the Italian team and with Connacht, so they look strong.
Yeah, nevertheless, like, you look at Ospreys team, you got Alwyn Jones, Justin Tipperick, Dan Bigger, Reese Webb, like, they got some serious talent right across the board there.
They absolutely do, and in kind of crucial positions as well. So they'll be a handful. They have experience in these kind of matches. They've gone, they've, you know, some of those guys will have come to Leinster, for example, and won a Pro 12 title away from home. So they're capable of doing it. But as James said, they've kind of stuttered their way to this point. I'd be really interested to hear Sean's opinion on how he feels that the game will unfold. I think it's going to be tight, but I just can't see past Munster at the moment. I think it's too big an ask. I think the way Munster retain possession, I think with that crowd behind them and Thomond, I just think they might have just too much for them.
So if you're a Munster coach at the moment, if you're Razzie Rasmus, Sean, you know, you're probably thinking Conor Murray, kick plenty of ball, try and keep it tight as possible, put pressure on the Ospreys and use that Thomond Park factor that we all know is so effective. If you're the Ospreys, you want it as loose as possible, do you?
Well, it's really interesting to hear you boys. You know, I think if I was a Munster or Leinster coach, I would rather play the Scarlets this weekend in spite of the recent form of the Ospreys, purely because they are the team that have been there and done it. They have a culture that is determined, pretty stubborn, and if there's on their day, they could perform an upset. I don't think they will, by the way, before you start, you know, ripping your scripts up, boys. I don't think they will. But, you know, there is a recipe to go to both these teams and winning, and it does require all of your top players performing really well on the day. That's one thing, and that's difficult to do. And secondly, it does require some things to go your way, and particularly the first 20 minutes. I think the longer into the arm wrestle you take Leinster and Munster, the more chance you've got away from home. They get a little bit edgy, they get a bit nervous, and they're well aware of your threat. The focus turns a little bit on the opposition then, and not really what they do best. So that's what the Ospreys' chance would be. I don't think they want it too loose, other than loose kicks, because they're quite potent with Dan Evans having a great season at 15. I think they'll want to take it to an arm wrestle. I think they'll want to take it at 20 minutes, be as error-free as they can, no turnovers, kick well, pressure months into penalties, you know, and take it to that last 20 minutes. That's the sort of team talk I know Steve Tandy wouldn't give in. It's up to Munster to negate that. Just a quick story. We played Munster in the Heineken Cup quarter-final with James Hook at 10 at Tomond, and my whole team talk all week was that, James, you kick the leather off the ball for the first 20 minutes. I don't want to see it in our hands, because I don't want Quinlan in the game, Wallace, Foley. I don't want turnovers and hacking through. 21 minutes on the clock, he hasn't kicked the ball once. And we lost the game, and I got all the blame.
It's funny that, though, isn't it? Like, Tomond Park, it does that to teams. I mean, I don't know, I'm not privy to what goes on in terms of team tactics and coaches, but you see so many sides go there, and you hear all the talk about what they're planning to do during the week. They walk out on the pitch, and everything just goes to pot.
100%. I was going to jump in on that one as well. We played with Northampton, we played Munster, and we said, right, like, all week to Roger Wilson, they're going to put a high ball up, just whatever you do, don't drop it, like, the crowd will get on you. So we practiced it all week, straight away from the kickoff, high ball, everyone shouting, straight then. You just kind of looked at him, you had a little smile, and said, oh,
not going to be,
it's gonna be a long day.
Day
at the office, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so just before we let you go then, Sean, how do you see it this weekend? Be honest.
If I'm honest, I'm working the TV tomorrow night. I'd love for one Welsh team to get to the final. Why? Because it means I'll come to Dublin next week. Simple as that.
Okay. Well, look, I tell you what, regardless, I'm sure there'll be an invite there somewhere for you to come over for the finals. Thanks many for your time as always, Sean. Enjoy the matches.
Thank you. Thanks.
Cheers,
good
Sean.
Luck, boys. All the best.
Cheers, Sean.
Look, you'd imagine on form and on everything we've seen this season, it should be an All-Ireland final. By the way, you're a Guinness Pro 12 ambassador for the final in the Aviva.
That's right.
You know, it would be great to see Leinster against Munster at the Aviva full tilt, because we haven't seen that this season. We haven't had the best 15 versus the best 15 so far.
Yeah, one of those Irish teams better winner my show is going to tank with the Indo as well. So, because we're actually pitch side for the Guinness Pro 12 final, so okay. We're kind of excited about that. It's obviously something that we're praying for. I do think that you know, it'd be highly unlikely if at least one of them didn't get through. I mean, I'm expecting both of them to go through. We've been talking about it for quite a while. I think everyone's expecting that. I think with good reason. I think there'll be decent matches, but I'm seeing easy wins for both, to be honest.
Would you agree?
Yeah, I would. And you touched on it there as well. Like, when Munster played Leinster and the Aviva the last time, it's not full strength teams. You want to see full strength teams. And I think we'll just add that, like, what Bide will have there would be a perfect occasion, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, just before we leave it, lads, I just want to mention something that Hayden Triggs brought up during the week. And I suppose I'm just interested to get your thoughts on this one. He's going to retire at the end of the season, 35 years of age. He says physically he could play on for another 2 years, no problem, but mentally he's done with the game. And it's the stuff that goes on outside of the rugby pitch. He said he graduated from a semi-professional environment, I suppose, and some of the amateur ethos came with him with that, into fully professional ranks. And while he enjoys playing still, he loves rugby, he doesn't like the stress and the strain and the focus and attention that goes with being a rugby player. Can you relate to that at all?
Yeah, I can, actually, a little bit, you know. Especially mine kind of finished a little bit different, in terms of, like, I could have played on, I felt, you know, but your career starts off and it finishes that you start off, you're working hard to get in the team, you play, then all of a sudden there's a young lad there and you're not playing as much, and you're like, well, okay, well, what's going on here? And it's just the cycle it is, you know, and it can be very frustrating. And I kind of fell out of love a little bit, and I didn't want to be a professional trainer. So I was like, and you know what? No, I'm happy to finish. I wanted to finish, and I was lucky enough to finish on my own terms. But outside of it, yeah, look, I think he's had a lot of personal problems. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think to have that highlighted makes it even harder.
Yeah.
And it's very poignant for him, and he wants to keep that quiet and completely understand that. And look, if that's the way it is, I can understand his points completely.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, not as much more to add to that. It's just, I just thought it was pretty sad to hear him to speak about it, because he's had a brilliant time at Leinster, he said, but this is the way he feels about it.
I think at a point as well, you get to that point where you just say, look, I've done this, you kind of figured it out. I'd say he's come, like you said, from a semi-professional environment. He's now tasted what it's like to be at the top table of professional rugby in Europe, at least. So, you know, there's nothing left for him to figure out on this end. Maybe he's just gotten to a point. He's got a young family. You know, obviously he's had a tough year, as James said. So, you know, probably time to step away. And if you don't feel like you can do it and the interest level isn't there, it's a really hard place to be. I wouldn't recommend anyone do it. You know, it's a real lifestyle rather than just a job.
Connacht travelling to Euro, boys, on Saturday afternoon. We'll have commentary on RT Radio 1 Sports. But, it's a big game for Northampton and for Connacht.
Yeah. Northampton haven't gone too well. Fell off the last couple of games of the year. Should have beaten Wasps, really. Should have beaten Saracens and lost in the last couple of plays. And just kind of summed up their season.
It's been a funny one, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been very strange, yeah. Pretty disappointing, to be honest, to see where they've gone. And I think they just kind of need to regroup and start again. And it seems to be that way in England, bar your Saracens. You kind of do well. Harlequins did it a few years ago. London Irish were in the semi-final a few years ago. And sometimes you have to you slip off and you need to rebuild. And it's hard. And I think it's going to be a tough game for them this weekend. But again, just given that home advantage, I think they're just going to sneak it.
Okay. Neither are you missing playing. I mean, semi-finals weekend, home matches.
I was just going to say, if Triggs thinks it's stressful being a rugby player, he's trying looking for a job.
Any offers for the lads, you can email us.
I've a Mets game this weekend, so I have to look after myself.
Right, okay, good stuff. Look, it's brilliant to have you both in. Live coverage tomorrow night on RT2FM, as I said, of Leinster against the Scarlets, and then on Saturday afternoon, it's Munster hosting the Ospreys. Luke and James, thanks a million.
The RTE Rugby Podcast.